The United States and Britain strike back against the Houthis.
British defense officials say their attacks have hit the Houthis' ability to target ships, while a US official said over a dozen sites were hit with precision munitions.
Plus, Israel continues to defend itself against South African accusations of genocide.
If there have been acts that may be characterized as genocidal, then they have been perpetrated against Israel.
And later, Rishi Sunak is visiting Ukraine, and he's feeling generous. We'll get an update from Kyiv and a look at the Human Rights Watch annual report. Today is Friday, January 12th, and this is VOA's Flashpoint, Global Crises. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. We'll follow up on South Africa's charges of genocide against Israel at the International Court of Justice in a moment, but our top story today is the American and British military strikes against Houthis in Yemen. On Thursday night, the United States and Britain launched strikes from the air and the sea against Houthi military targets in Yemen in response to their attacks on ships in the Red Sea. Reuters' Ryan Chang has the details.
American and British aircraft carried out strikes on Houthi targets in Yemen on Thursday, a dramatic expansion of the war in the Middle East. This came after weeks of Houthi attacks on maritime shipping in the Red Sea, and days after US and British naval forces shot down 21 Houthi drones and missiles, some of which President Joe Biden said directly targeted American ships. Clips from U.S. Central Command showed American fighter jets taking off from an aircraft carrier at sea. Meanwhile, the UK's Defence Ministry released video of what it said were jets launched from RAF Akritori on Cyprus. British defence officials say their attacks have hit the Houthis' ability to target ships, while a U.S. official said over a dozen sites were hit with precision munitions. While Washington says it has no intent to escalate tensions, the Houthis have vowed to retaliate. A Houthi spokesperson said after the strikes that they will continue targeting ships headed towards Israel. The Iran-backed group has attacked 27 ships in the Red Sea since December. They say it's a show of support for the Palestinians and Hamas. The attacks have disrupted maritime shipping. Some firms now avoid Red Sea routes, stoking up energy and food prices. A US-led task force called Operation Prosperity Garden has been set up to defend shipping lines, and over 20 countries signed up to join it. Thursday's strikes took place outside that coalition. President Biden cautioned in a statement late on Thursday he would not hesitate to take further action if needed.
That's Reuters' Ryan Chang reporting. Following the news of the strikes, British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak told reporters that the strikes were an act of self-defense and to protect global commerce.
Our aim is very clear. It's to de-escalate tensions and to restore stability to the region. And that's why allies over the past few weeks have issued several statements of condemnation of what's happening, calling on the Houthis to desist. Indeed, just this week, we've seen a UN Security Council resolution condemning what's happening and saying that states have a right to self-defense. We have acted in self-defense. It's incumbent now on the Houthis to stop carrying out these attacks, putting people's lives at risk and disrupting the global economy.
For more context and details about Thursday night's attacks, I'm joined by VOA's national security correspondent, Jeff Selden.
Yes, the U.S. and Britain took out a number of targets that gave the Houthis, or sites that gave the Houthis, allowed the Houthis to have access to the Red Sea and be able to have capabilities to disrupt the shipping and to attack the shipping. So first, the U.S., which carried out these airstrikes by manned aircraft, fighter jets in the air, by Navy vessels in the sea, and by submarine. They took out first the radar installations. They took out air defense systems to make it easier to conduct these strikes and other strikes. And then they heavily went after locations where the Houthis were either storing or launching or both the drones, the cruise missiles, and the ballistic missiles that they were using to carry out the more than two dozen attacks on shipping in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden. In addition to that, the U.S. and Britain also hit some command and control areas, which obviously were playing a key role in the ability of the Houthis to try to coordinate some of their attacks on international shipping.
Now, what do we know about the Houthis' capabilities? They said they will retaliate for these attacks. Do they have more ammunition left? Are they still able to mount an attack either against the United States or against against other shipping interests?
The U.S. officials who spoke after the strikes were carried out acknowledge that there is a chance, and in fact, that there's an expectation that the Houthis still have some capabilities and will try to take some sort of retaliatory measures, that they will try to conduct either more attacks on ships or that they will look for other ways, either the Houthis or other Iranian-backed proxies will try to find some way to attack U.S. and Western targets. But they are still waiting and waiting to see exactly how the Houthis are going to respond. Because while the strikes, the initial assessment said that they did significant damage and were aimed at significantly degrading Houthi capabilities, the Houthis are supplied constantly by Iran. They have been well armed in the past, and they still have some very dangerous capabilities even now. So it is a kind of a wait and see in terms of how this is going to progress.
Now, since the October 7th attacks against Israel, the Pentagon and the White House both have said one of their main goals is to not allow this conflict to escalate to the entire region. How is Washington squaring that idea with what happened on Thursday night?
Well, the U.S. and Britain are portraying these strikes against Houthi targets really as self-defense. And while it may not seem like self-defense for the United States itself, or for Britain itself, but they say it is self-defense because the Houthis were illegally and recklessly launching multiple attacks, putting shipping and putting vessels and putting people from more than 50 nations constantly at risk over the past several weeks. And they said that simply is unacceptable and it has to stop. And if you remember, just the other week, the U.S. and 12 other nations issued a statement warning the Houthis that these attacks must stop. A U.S. official even characterized that as the last warning. And since then, the Houthis decided to carry out two additional attacks, including one on Tuesday that involved almost two dozen attack drones, cruise missiles, and ballistic missiles. So they say that there really was no more choice, that credibility was at stake, and that the need to degrade Houthi capabilities to protect the shipping lanes, to protect the ships and the people on those ships, action had to be taken.
Jeff Seldon is VOA's national security correspondent. Jeff, thanks for your analysis today.
Anytime.
Israel has called allegations that it's carrying out a state-sponsored genocide of the Palestinian people false and grossly distorted. Reuters' David Doyle has more.
At the International Court of Justice on Friday, it also urged judges to throw out the genocide case brought by South Africa.
If there have been acts that may be characterized as genocidal, then they have been perpetrated against Israel.
At hearings on Thursday, South Africa asked the court to impose emergency measures ordering Israel to halt its military campaign. But on Friday, the Israeli Foreign Ministry's legal advisor, Tal Becker, said to do so would leave Israel defenseless.
It is respectfully submitted that the application and request should be dismissed for what they are, a libel designed to deny Israel the right to defend itself according to the law from the unprecedented terrorist onslaught it continues to face, and to free the 136 hostages Hamas still holds.
Israel launched its war in Gaza after the October 7th cross-border rampage by Hamas militants. Israeli officials say 1,200 people were killed and 240 taken hostage. South Africa argued that Israel's subsequent bombardment of the Palestinian enclave, killing well over 23,000 people according to Gaza health authorities, aimed to bring about the destruction of Gaza's population. However, Becker put forward that Israel's war was against Hamas and not the Palestinian people, and that the key component of genocide, the intent to destroy a people in whole or part, was totally lacking. That, Israel argued, meant the ICJ has no jurisdiction under the Genocide Convention to order a halt to its military actions. However, South Africa's Justice Minister, Roland Lamola, said Israel had failed to disprove his country's case.
Self-defense is no answer to genocide. Nothing can ever justify genocide. There is no balancing exercise, as Israel has sought to suggest. The prohibition is absolute.
Outside the court, Palestinian backers marched with flags and watched proceedings on a giant screen. Israeli supporters also held a gathering of family members of hostages taken by Hamas. The court is expected to rule on possible emergency measures later this month. However, a ruling on the genocide allegations could take years. The ICJ's decisions are final and without appeal, but the court has no way to enforce them.
Now, we meet a young Israeli woman who lives near the border with Lebanon. She evacuated her home as Hezbollah fighters started targeting Israel from inside Lebanon. She longs to return home, but she fears being attacked. She's one of thousands displaced from their homes along the Israel-Lebanon border, not knowing when they'll be able to return. Reuters' Rachel Faber reports.
It's just horrible.
17-year-old Hadar Schusterman longs to return home to her northern Israeli village. She's one of more than 96,000 Israelis who have fled their homes near the Lebanese border since the October 7th Hamas attack, fearing militant group Hezbollah could unleash a similar assault in the north.
These guys are stronger than Hamas. Can you imagine what they think they can do to us?
She and her family stay in a hotel just south of the evacuation zone, paid for by the government. Returning home is unthinkable, but no one knows if, when, or how the risk will be eliminated. She has imagined Hezbollah militants coming in cars or boats to kill her and her family. Hezbollah says its attacks aim to draw Israeli forces north and to deter Israel from carrying out a broader assault on Lebanon. The clashes have killed at least one civilian and 9 troops on the Israeli side, and at least 23 civilians in Lebanon, where many people near the border have also fled their homes. Hadar's father, Ran Schusterman, returns to the family farm to work most days. It's only 3 miles from the border. He says when they hear sirens or shelling, they run to the nearest bomb shelter or lay face down in the fields with their hands on their heads. Oral Nimron works on Schusterman's farm.
It's really hard, hard to deal with every day. I can tell you every day I come to work and I really am stressed, asking myself, is this the day this is going to explode?
More than 117 Israelis are also displaced from southern areas close to Gaza. The threat from Hamas and Hezbollah effectively make parts of Israel's territory unlivable, something Israel says it won't tolerate indefinitely. Despite warlike rhetoric on both sides, recent skirmishes have not escalated into an all-out war like the one Israel is waging against Hamas.
That's Reuters' Rachel Faber reporting for us today. You're listening to Flashpoint Global Crises from the Voice of America. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Human Rights Watch has released its annual report. We'll find out what's in it in a few minutes. Now, though, Ukraine. President Zelensky is back in Kyiv to meet British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak. Meanwhile, Ukraine is experiencing a new corruption scandal. VOA's Anna Chernikova has more from Kyiv.
The president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, has completed his Baltic countries tour with a visit to Latvia on Thursday evening. At a joint briefing with the Ukrainian president, Latvian President Edgar Sienkiewicz said that Latvia takes a leading role in the drone coalition among countries that provide military support to Ukraine. Sienkiewicz also announced the next package of military aid from Latvia, which will include howitzers, artillery shells and anti-tank weapons. Another high-profile visit is taking place in Kyiv on Friday, as Prime Minister of Great Britain Rishi Sunak has arrived in Ukraine. Sunak wrote in X that he arrived to deliver a simple message that British support for Ukraine cannot and will not falter. Sunak met with President Zelensky and signed a security agreement that will be valid until Ukraine joins NATO. Zelensky said,
"If such level of security guarantees had been achieved after 1991 with Britain and with other countries, then there simply would not have been Russian aggression."
Sunak added,
"This is the first
in a series of new bilateral security assurances promised to Ukraine by 30 countries at last year's Vilnius summit. And it says that if Russia ever invades Ukraine again, the UK will come to your aid with swift and sustained security assurance. We will provide the modern equipment across land, sea and sky, sanction Russia's economy, and work closely with allies to do so. You will not have to ask. You will not have to argue for what you need. The UK will be there from the first moment to the last.
Also, Prime Minister Sunak announced that Great Britain will allocate £200 million for the production of various drones for the Ukrainian military. Meanwhile, Ukraine is experiencing a new corruption scandal. On December 29, 2023, the State Bureau of Investigation detained Lviv businessman Igor Grinkevich, one of the largest suppliers to the Ministry of Defense of Ukraine, who offered a bribe of $500,000 to one of the heads of the Bureau's main investigative department for assistance in returning property seized from his companies. Since October 2023, the SBI has been investigating the case of the Ministry of Defense's procurement of goods, personal protective equipment and food for the armed forces. In particular, the SBI accused that the supplier was signing contracts and getting advance payments but without intending to fulfill them. This case received excessive public outcry after journalists published the details of the businessman's and his family's luxurious life on the money allegedly stolen from the Ukraine's defense budget. On January 9, the Ministry of Defense announced that it was terminating contracts with companies related to Grinkevich and his family. On January 11, the SBI announced that it has seized family's property. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
In northwestern Syria, the new year has ushered in deep fear as aid workers warn of an imminent hunger crisis affecting millions. The World Food Program has stopped regular food aid in Syria, and displaced families say that when they run out of their current supplies, they don't know how they will eat. VOA's Heather Murdoch reports from Istanbul with Moawia Atrash in Atame, Syria.
In recent years, food aid for millions of people in Syria has been reduced multiple times because of funding shortages. And by the end of 2023, 2.5 million people were already cut off, according to the World Food Program. Syrian families still receiving food were stretching rations intended for a month out for 2 months at a time. Dawlat al-Sharif, a displaced mother whose husband works in a shop for 200 Turkish liras a week, less than $7, says that her family relied entirely on that last little bit of aid. She says now that the food aid is cut off, her family will need rice, bulgur, and all other basic food items. Life in the camp will be hard without aid or enough money to buy food. In December, the World Food Program announced that 2024 food aid would be suspended in Syria, and the last deliveries to this area were made that month. The region is now home to nearly 4.5 million people, and 65% of them are displaced, with most living in camps. Officials who oversee aid coming into Syria say people here are already hungry, and that this loss will soon lead to disaster. This is Mazen Alush, the media director at the Bab el-Hawa border crossing with Turkey. He warns that if humanitarian agencies do not provide food, the region could slide into an uncontrollable famine. Many of the families in camps have been displaced multiple times, and war here continues with nearly 100 civilians killed in recent months. Families without incomes will be the first to starve, say local leaders. Khalid Muhammad El-Akal, an administrator of a displacement camp housing about 1,500 families, says disabled people, widows, and orphans have no food without the international aid. He says the monthly food basket was all they had, and even that wasn't enough, as it was provided every 2 months. Officials say local organizations do not have the money to supply food aid, and they are now just hoping against hope that some kind of last-minute new resource of desperately needed food will materialize. Heather Murdoch in Istanbul with Muawiya Atrash in Atma, Syria, VOA News.
And finally today, in its annual report published on Thursday, Human Rights Watch accused Israel of war crimes and said that many governments were expressing, quote, selective outrage over atrocities committed in the conflict in Gaza. Henry Ridgewell reports.
In its annual report published Thursday, Human Rights Watch accused Israel of war crimes and said many governments were expressing selective outrage over atrocities committed in the conflict in Gaza. Henry Ridgewell reports. With major conflicts in Ukraine and Gaza, the Human Rights Watch annual report says 2023 was a formidable year for human rights suppression, marked by tremendous human suffering. The organization criticizes what it calls selective outrage expressed by many governments, which it says undermines the human rights of everyone. Middle East and North Africa director at Human Rights Watch, Lama Faki.
Some states have been ready to rightly criticize the horrific attacks by Hamas-led fighters in Israel on October 7th, but they have not been willing to speak out against the abuses that are taking place by the Israeli military in Gaza.
Israel's strongest allies, including the United States and many European nations, have supported the country's right to defend itself. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken spoke to reporters Tuesday following his latest visit to Tel Aviv.
You know that facing an enemy that embeds itself among civilians, who hides in and fires from schools, from hospitals, makes this incredibly challenging. But the daily toll on civilians in Gaza, particularly on children, is far too high.
Human Rights Watch goes further, accusing Israel of committing war crimes, which it strongly denies. Again, Lama Faki.
Hamas clearly failed to adhere to obligations under the law on October 7th, and we are continuing to see the failure of the Israeli military to do the same. So we saw that there was an intentional cutting off of water, of fuel, and the electricity, and restrictions on deliveries of humanitarian assistance. This is clearly an example of collective punishment.
Human Rights Watch also highlights the suffering caused by conflict in Sudan and in Myanmar, where the military junta continues its deadly campaign against ethnic minority groups. In the Sahel region of Africa, Human Rights Watch says militant groups and counter-terrorist forces regularly commit atrocities. The report highlights the persecution of women under Taliban rule in Afghanistan. It accuses several countries, including India, Rwanda, and China, of targeting their nationals living abroad, often political dissidents or their families back home. Human Rights Watch praises institutions that have stood up for human rights, such as the International Criminal Court issuing an arrest warrant for Russian President Vladimir Putin over accusations that Moscow is forcibly transferring Ukrainian children to its territory. It also highlighted a September ruling by Brazil's Supreme Court upholding indigenous peoples' rights to their traditional lands. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
And that's going to end today's program. There's more VOA coverage 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and across our social media platforms. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for listening. Until next week, I'm Steve Karish.
Stay up to date with VOA Podcasts. Each weekday, International Edition covers the world's biggest stories, while Flashpoint Iran and Flashpoint Ukraine examine their respective regions in depth every week.